And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So we said we'd bring a show for you today because there's a little bit of spillover from the All-Ireland, and I wanted to get some reaction from the Limerick camp. So we have Seamus Flanagan coming up on the show, which I'm very excited about. I'm a big fan of Seamus Flanagan, as anybody who's listened to the show for the last 3 years will be able to tell you. There's been some talk after the show, Brian, or since the All-Ireland, Brian, about Limerick's backroom team. And there's been a lot of screenshots from the programme, and like they have John Kiley, and then they have a backroom team of 20 people. And it's in contrast to the backroom team Waterford had, which was almost half that. Now, there was nothing really incredible standing out from the backroom team. Like, they had an assistant goalkeeping coach, which I thought was a little bit unusual. You know, I wouldn't think too many teams have that. They had three stats men. You know, Leash, for example, would get players to do the stats a lot of the time. You know, they had a video analyst. Nothing too major here. But I suppose, Brian, people are talking about JP McManus's money and the sponsorship and what the teams at the top level can afford.
Yeah, I suppose there's a few things in that. Just like the standout point for me in that was that the selectors were also described as coaches. And I thought that was massive. Because we all know that the day of a selector just, you know, rocking on and leaning against the wire or sitting in the dugout is gone. Yeah. So that's very appropriate that they were also called selectors / coaches. And obviously we know that Paul Kinnock is the head coach. So, you know, he's driving things, but it's a big shift over the last number of years where selectors are expected and encouraged to be involved in the coaching side of things. And I think that's great, and it is the way forward. It allows, obviously, teams to work, you know, with small groups and work on certain things, like sometimes with the backs or the forwards, or break it down even further in terms of the full back line or half back line or whatever. So, you know, that side of things is important, and you need selectors that obviously have a deep knowledge of the game, which I think all selectors should have, but they also have to have that coaching side of things and be very comfortable with it. And I suppose there's also an element of upskilling there, that they become more involved in the overall process. And, you know, if ever needed, they are able to, you know, put themselves forward to maybe learn from someone like Paul Kinnock, and that they'll be able to bring that forward in terms of the coaching ticket or step up as a head coach themselves. I think that's something similar in terms of the assistant goalkeeping coach. Obviously, I'm really looking at this from the outside, but maybe they have a main one and they're maybe putting another goalkeeping coach through an apprenticeship, almost, for want of a better description, that he gets an opportunity to see how things are done and then help out in certain ways. So, you know, these are all, it's a good model overall. It's a very good model of how you can maybe learn from the best at the top in terms of John Kiley and Paul Kinnock, but also in terms of obviously overall structures, that it seems to be very, very well run and well thought out, you know, backroom staff. I'd say with Liam Cahill, I'd say obviously coming from an under 20 or under 21 setup over the last couple of years, a minor previous to that, they wouldn't have as big a setup. They wouldn't have as many people involved, you know, naturally. The same finances aren't there, and the same amount of people to actually maybe help out. Aaron Knoll was there. Even if you are with successful teams, you know, you want a small team that you can trust. And I'd say that's exactly what Liam Cahill did going into Waterford. He brought a small team. He didn't change things up a huge amount from what he was used to at under 20. And I suppose it made that transition pretty seamless for him. And that's why, you know, people hold him in such regard after the year he's after having. You know, it'd be interesting to see Willie change. There's a lot of talk about a lot more financial backing expected to be given to Waterford in terms of that senior setup next year. So it'll be interesting to see Willie, you know, bring in many more in terms of his backroom team, and does he see the need to it? Like, you know, it's a wider point. You know, we hear of the backroom teams in Dublin in football, obviously, in particular. You know, Tipperary have had a big backroom team over the last number of years, Limerick obviously now as well. Is there a correlation between success and a big backroom staff? Not necessarily, obviously. You know, you can have as big a backroom team as you want, but it doesn't guarantee it.
No, it doesn't guarantee it, but having the financial backing to, like, a lot of those people in the backroom team would be volunteers, but a lot of them aren't. And I suppose, like, they'd have Caroline Currid, who's the most highly regarded sports psychologist, you know, have the best physios rather than just the physios another county might afford. We know in every line of work, Brian, like yourself, you have good teachers and you have bad teachers. I'm sure you're falling into the first category. But, like, I mean, there's obviously people that cost more money because they're the best. And I did think there was something stood out for me with their strength and conditioning coach during the week. And this goes the same as Dublin. A lot of people say money can't buy it, but like the top level high performance setups is obviously an advantage. And anyone that would argue that it's not is madness. And I'm not criticising Limerick. They're very lucky to have a very wealthy sponsor. And Dublin are very lucky that they have AIG money. Like, I mean, I'm not cribbing about this. I'm just saying the idea that having a top notch setup doesn't affect the team. Of course it does. Like Michael Kiley, who's their strength and conditioning coach, he was talking about the lockdown. He says, so they worked on speed during the lockdown. He says, so we did it in two blocks, working on biomechanics and acceleration. Speed isn't something you generally get to work on because you need a lot of time to recover. He said, we do speed work in sessions, but as S&C coaches, we sometimes fool ourselves as how effective it can be. And I just thought that seems like a very smart thing to do during a lockdown, Brian, for a strength and conditioning coach. Let's do something that we wouldn't be able to do if we were always training.
Yeah, no, I thought that was excellent. I think, just to go back to your other point, I think there is a correlation between teams that are successful and attracting the best, people that are out there as well. Obviously, you need the financial backing as well. But all, you know, due respect, you know, like some of the top people in strength and conditioning or some of the top people maybe in terms of sports psychologists or nutritionists or whatever, unless they're just getting off the ground, they're not going to work with the lesser teams, even unless they're absolute mercenary for money. Even if huge money is thrown at them, you know, people want to work with the best teams and the teams that are most successful. We all know that. That's natural in life as well. You know, outside managers that move to teams, they handpick them generally. You know, they want to make sure that they're with a team that has a huge chance of success, and you want your name, you know, associated with the success that happened. So I think there is a little bit of that as well, because it makes it a lot more difficult for the lesser teams. And I've spoken about this before, and that's why it's so hard for some of the lesser teams to maybe make up that gap. It's very hard. And we see, and I said this before as well, we see this in many other sports. You know, we see it in soccer, we see it in American football, we see it all over the place. So it is tough. Going back to your point, in terms of the lockdown, I think in fairness to Limerick, I think it's year three of John Cleary's setup, and they have everything down, you know, fine-tuned. It's top class. Actually, sorry, it's year four, sorry. So, like, they obviously are very far on in terms of, how in tune they are to what they need. And I thought that was very, very good and made it something very enjoyable for the players. You know, that type of speed work that they could actually work on and maybe work on, as you said, work on things that they otherwise didn't have time to was very good. And it was a way of keeping players very interested, which we all know was a very, very difficult time mentally and very mundane in terms of that first lockdown.
Yeah, no, exactly. And Michael Kiley said that the speed blocks resulted in an improved acceleration performance over 5 metres and 20 metres on the previous testing they did in February. So, like, I mean, we know strength and conditioning fellas like to talk themselves up. I don't think there's anything unusual about that, but I do give, again, expertise. And Michael Kiley was also talking about Paul Kinnerk, and he was saying Paul understands and looks for the data. He wants to know how hard the players he wants to know how hard the players perceive a certain game is within the session. He wants to know what their heart rates are at, and we don't bring them back into training until they've fully recovered. Like, I mean, Limerick would have heart rate monitors and GPSs, you know, for the training sessions and be able to get live data of how hard they work during the sessions and not bring them back in until the following. And again, I'm just trying to paint a picture about what a high performance, because we obviously had Eddie Brennan on the show recently, and after the Clare defeat, he was looking for more money off the Laois County Board, you know, to bring them up a level. And I'm just trying to paint a picture of what this higher level would look like. And, you know, this is another example of it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of counties have moved towards that GPS and the live data. And, you know, I think we've probably seen it more prevalent in football, where Mayo were probably one of the teams a couple of years ago taking off players because they'd gone into the red zone, we'll call it, for want of a better description. And that live data is obviously a lot more accessible to people nowadays, and they are wearing it in training. I know every county player was given the GPS during that lockdown as well, so that their sessions were being monitored by management. You know, so there's no place to hide anymore. The county hurlers or footballers out there, it's crazy how far it's moved on. It's a whole different world from what we were playing bully. So it is mad that they're able to have that. But obviously, it's all grand having data, and this goes for all. It's the fact how well they use the data, I think, is crucial from Limerick, and they seem to be excellent at doing that. And you know, that's you know, an interesting take on that. That Paul Kinnock is very interested to see how much it's affecting their players, because that just shows how much he thinks about his games that he's using in his training sessions, not just in terms of, you know, the overall aim of the game in terms of possession or tackling or whatever the, you know, the particular game is for, but how much it's actually affecting the body as well. So, you know, that's very, very interesting to hear.
Paul Kinnock, mentioning him, his CV is absolutely out of control. So he's 3 All-Ireland senior titles with Clare, 13, 18 and 20 with Limerick. He's All-Ireland under-21s in 12, 13, 14. He's Munster senior in 19, 20. Munster under-21, 12, 13 and 14. Munster minor 2010 and 11. That's when he got his break in with Clare. And he's a National League in 16, 19 and 20. Like, I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal what that fella has been doing. And he's a football man. Like, he's an ex-Limerick footballer. Like, and I think, Brian, and like, I mean, I've said this before, that he's brought a lot of football tactics into hurling, like a possession-based game, moving the ball through the lines, getting the ball to a certain point and then giving nice diagonal balls in, you know, laying it off to a man running past you, almost like, you know, full forward type play in Gaelic football, where a man, it's a lovely diagonal ball, he wins it, and there's a man running off and he hand passes it to him. You know, while Cork might have dabbled in that in the past, probably nowhere near to the extent that Kinnock has brought it to. And like, I'm only speculating here that maybe he's brought a little bit of tactical fouling in there as well. Like, I mean, he definitely has brought hurling, and I think it's him, because it's all happened since he started with Clare in 13 at senior level, this possession-based game, short stick passes, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely that side is, you can see that a clear trend towards, you know, football. It's not obviously all out football, because not as many people filter back, but there are obviously a significant number filtering back at this stage. And you're dead right, there was one point there in the All-Ireland where Limerick just worked the ball through the lines with a series of hand passes. And I actually commented, you know, when I was doing commentary for the game, that it is a Dublin footballers are looking at. It was so seamless of what they were doing. And you said those lovely diagonal balls, they never waste the ball. I think that's probably,
yeah,
the biggest compliment you can pay to Limerick at the moment. Whether it's a hand pass, a short strike or a long strike, the ball, it's always on point. And I think that's what's so admirable about them at the moment. But that, again, that comes back to the conditions that they're training in, and the condition games and the games-based approach that they have. It's just so ingrained in them, in their approach. And it's beautiful. Like, look, there's been hints of football influence on hurling for many years. Like, you know, we heard about Kilkenny years ago bringing in some of the coaches from Armagh to help with the swarm tackle as well and stuff like that. So, you know, like, it's you know, maybe, and you know, remember Mick Dempsey as well was a football man from Leash as well, and he was the main strength conditioning coach with Kilkenny for years as well, and their tackling was off the charts obviously as well. So you can see there's been a change for a number of years now in the way that players tackle. You know, the traditional maybe hook and block, players don't rely on it as much. You know, it's the stand-up tackle. It's the get bodies in. Yeah. One person stands them up, the other person gets in to win the ball. You know, there's a lot more thought process put into the actual tackling than just, you know, your one-on-one defender. It's probably why we hear a lot about, you know, maybe the older generation maybe pining for the, you know, years of before where, you know, you had that one-on-one defending where you had to get in a hook or a blast or whatever. And it's still there in the game. It's never going to go completely. But, you know, there's certainly a different type of tackle as well we've seen over the last number of years. So it is interesting. The thing is, we don't want to see it go too much like football. I think the boys out there don't want. No, but, like, and that's not a disrespect. You know, it's like hurling. I think we've obviously moved away from the day of just get the ball and lump it down the field. That's obvious. You know, and there's just something hugely admirable about the way Limerick play. You can't but admire their style. But you have to remember as well, they have an unbelievable crop of players that have come through a system in Limerick. That's you know, it's been excellent. And they're at a very young age. and they seem to be very well grounded as well by John Kiely. So it's a perfect storm for Limerick at the moment. And I was just reading the stat the other day where the average height is 6'2" and the average weight is 13'11".
Yeah.
Like, you know, Graham McCarthy is the only small player they have, per se. You know, Sean Finn mightn't be that tall, but he's still, you know,
he's a bull, yeah.
And he's well built. So the rest of the players, apart from Graham McCarthy, are huge. You know, so this, I'm saying, it's a perfect storm for them right now, and it's worrying for all the rest of the counties. I also heard as well that, you know, or read that there was the average winning margin this year was 6 points, and like that maybe. As they might say, looking at that very coldly, that you know, it seems to be a pretty tight championship. I think it's pretty tight apart from Limerick. I think Limerick just seems to be a step ahead of everyone else. You look at next year and you say, who do you think can bridge that gap? And it's very hard to pick a team that's going to try and bring down this Limerick team right now.
No, it definitely is. So 3 points from play and another brilliant performance in the final for Seamus Flanagan. And he joins us on the line now. Seamus, how's it going?
Good, Willie. Good. And yourself?
Very good, very good. Come here, a little birdie tells me you have college exams this week. So you're just after winning an All-Ireland. You've got your college exams. We're coming up to Christmas. This must be a very bizarre time in your life.
Yeah, come here. Look, it's a strange time, I think, for everyone, you know, everyone that's involved in the team. You know, sitting your Christmas exams coming up to and after winning an All-Ireland final on a Sunday, you know, it's one for the books, I suppose. You know, it's one that's going to go down in history. But yeah, no, look, it's set me up in good stead, and you're going into these exams with, I suppose, a sense of achievement and you're back, and hopefully these go well for me now, just as well as Sunday did for Limerick, you know.
Yeah. How did the celebrations compare to 2018?
Yeah, you know, I suppose different would be a word I'd use. And it was, you know, after 45 years of away from in 2018, I think, you know, that was a special one. That I've memories from that made from that would go down in history, you know. But you know what, this one's the same. We don't do it easy down here in Limerick. You know, we won one after 45 years and another after a global pandemic. You know, we made things hard for ourselves down here.
Here, it must have been a weird game. Like, I'm talking about the celebrations afterwards, and like I'm sure you celebrated, but even the build up to the game would have been very low key. And I was at the game, and like it felt like, I don't know what it felt like. There was no crest in the middle of the pitch. There was no meeting the president. There was no parade. The game just seemed to start out of nowhere. It was weird.
Yeah, it was strange. And then the helicopters were flying over us then as well. And it was kind of, you know, that's usually safe for the big day and the 82,000 people in Croke Park roaring. And it was kind of, you know, I suppose that kind of masked it. Declan was giving us a bit of a speech there in the huddle, and the helicopter was there, so Declan was roaring. But I think that was the first time all year I've heard Declan have to roar in a pre-match kind of speech, you know. And right. It was odd, but come here, it was, I suppose you kind of got used to it. It was, you know, I kind of go back to, it was nearly like a club game, you know. You can hear, I suppose, the fact that the extended panel were there, they were making a bit more noise, and then you had the subs on the bench, and you know, everything that's coming in from John and Paul can be heard. And yeah, it's an odd one. And I suppose they had the kids, you know, in the local schools had made out, you know, cut out posters from, I suppose, from Limerick and Waterford as well, and they were in the stand. They were a bit eerie at the same time, but no, it was odd is what I'd say. But no, it looked none less enjoyable. And you know what's at stake. You're running out past the Lee McCarthy there, you know, before the warm up, and that's at stake. So it was no less important as any other game that we've played throughout our careers.
Yeah, Killian O'Connor, actually, the Mayo corner forward, mentioned that it was like a club match. It's a bit similar to a club match as well. Like, I mean, is there less pressure from that regard? Like, you know, going into an All-Ireland final?
Personally, for myself, I did. I felt like, you know, once I got the semi-final out of the way, because obviously I hadn't been starting all up until there.
Yeah.
Once I got, I was probably more nervous for the semi-final than I was for the final. On a personal regard, because I was like, you know, I want to obviously win the game, and from a personal performance point of view. But you know, if an All Ireland final looms after the semi final, you want to put your hand up and, you know, get your selection there as well. So I was probably more nervous for the semi final, and once I played in Croke Park and, you know, did the empty stadium kind of thing, it was as if, again, like a club game or a challenge game. I know I kind of link it back. We played Galway in a challenge game down in Limerick once we knew the championship's going ahead, and it was very, very similar to that. But yeah, again, less pressure, and you know, you're going out there, and you're like, this is, you're not worried about any sideshows, any Artane Boys band, any parades, anything like that. It's kind of just the game, and that's it, and that's all you have to focus on.
Yeah, because I'm sure you would have prepared for all those changes. Like, you know, Carolyn Cura does a lot of work with you, and you know, your management team is top class. You would have discussed in the week the big change. You know, this is not an All-Ireland final that you're used to.
No, definitely, and Caroline, you know, Caroline's brilliant in that regard, because you know, she says things like it is, and this is what it's going to be like. And, you know, just adjust to that, kind of, you know, mentality in your headspace, and just go to that place where you need to go to. So, you know, we were all prepped for that. And I suppose having the semi-final played in similar conditions, it was definitely a help. And I suppose it was the same for Waterford, having the semi-final play with no crowd there. You know, there was talk then before the game whether they might let a couple of thousand people in, like they're doing with the soccer in England at the moment. But no, thankfully, you know, it went off the same way the semi-final was. We were used to it. We kind of had our dry run done, and things kind of panned out the way that they did.
Yeah, you were definitely up for it, so you were, weren't you? Like, I mean, you scored 3 points. You celebrated two of them. Was it your third one you celebrated, the one under the Hogan stand? I haven't really seen you celebrating scores like that before. Was this kind of like trying to create a bit of atmosphere amongst the team, or was that just some sort of release for yourself?
I think personally for myself, I think I gave one of them, I gave him the double fist pump.
You did, yeah.
I don't think one sufficed there at all towards the end, but no, come here. Yeah, it was. I suppose a sense of, you know, I went through a tough 2019 with injuries, and, you know, I suppose other guys were coming in, you know, Peter Casey, Graham McKay and Aaron Gillan inside there. They're probably the best full forward in that's there. And I was trying to break into that from within my 2018 season. And it just never really happened for me. So I suppose the getting to start that final again 2 years later, and, you know, I suppose playing a crucial role in that win. I think, yeah, just, you know, throwing those shackles off, weight off the shoulders. And I just said to myself, you know, let's cut loose here and let's see what we can do. And I think you saw that across the whole thing, you know, Grote Hegarty popping up with 7, Tom Morrissey with 5. You know, they were standout players for the whole season for us. And I think it was a case of, you know, after the disappointment of 2019, it was a case of let's just throw off the shackles. Let's show people what we can do. And it was kind of, I suppose you could relate it back to that freestyle hurling. It was just really fluid, and, you know, everyone just loved their hurling this year. It was just amazing.
Yeah, what do you put down the getting dropped in for pretty much the whole season, just being an impact sub in 2019? Like, what you mentioned injuries. Did you have a dip in form? You know, I would have always had you as a very important part of that team.
Yeah, no, it was definitely. I think I started out the season. We had the trips abroad and stuff, and we came back in, and we were rolling straight back into league. And I think I kind of struggled to find my form again in 2019.
Right.
I think it was just all, there was no preseason as such. It was a case of we came back from our team holiday and it was straight back into training. And it was very much a case of that, you know, once you needed to hit the ground running, and that didn't really happen for me. And I remember I rolled my ankle twice. I did the hamstring. I came on against Cork, I think in the first round they beat us, and I did my hamstring, and we were after using our last sub, so I had to stay on. So that obviously aggravated that more.
Right.
And then it was just kind of a series, I think, of a culmination of things, to be honest. So, I just struggled to find form. And when you say impact sub, I don't think I really made much of an impact in 2019. And not getting to come on in the semi-final then was a massive, I think, driving force for me to push on in 2020. And the way things that panned out then, obviously, you know, we weren't sure if there was a championship going to go ahead, but I really carried that form through into the club. And, you know, we went to a county semi-final only to be beaten by a point by Napiershig. So I was, yeah, I just kind of carried that form through. And I was just kind of, I think I went back to my old roots in 2018, and, you know, that kind of youthful, carefree, and, you know, let's do everything to the best of our ability and not really think too much about things.
Right, yeah, maybe. And that definitely showed when you came on. Like, were you surprised to get the start then against Galway? Because, like, I was predicting it on the show based on how well you did against Dahi Burke. You know how intimidating a player he can be, that you ran him around in 2018, and I was thinking maybe that would be a great game for you to start again. Were you expecting that call-up?
No, I wasn't. And I only kind of found, I suppose, Kylie keeps his cards close to his chest, and, you know, you don't really know where you stand as regards team basis. But I was just thinking to myself, look, the boys won the Munster final against Waterford. You know, it's very hard to change a winning team. So I was prepping myself for, you know, coming on for those last 15, 20 minutes and just making that impact that I had been making, would say, throughout the season. That's where I was mentally. And I think on the Tuesday night then, we usually run through a 15-on-15. And, you know, it's only 15 minutes towards the end of it. And I remember he was calling out the teams, and I remember he had called Dara at midfield with Will, and I was like, oh, Keane's got to centre forward again for this game, because he'd switched back the week before.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, that's the change. And kind of, I think I said to one of the lads, I kind of zoned out and I looked up into the stand, and, you know, the catering company had come in and the food was getting set up for after. And I was like, oh, what could we be having today? Is it curry or is it stew? And then all I heard was Aaron Gillan and Seamus Flanagan. And I looked over and I was like, that's a mistake. Surely that's a mistake. So I remember I went out in that session and I think I was on Dan Morrissey and I think I popped 1-3 off Dan and just absolutely was like, right, if even if this is, you know, him trying something or something, I was like, let's put the thought in his head. So that night went well for me. And then on the Friday came and, you know, I was named as starting foot forward. So absolutely over the moon. And as I said, I think the nerves probably kicked in then for me, being like, I needed to, you know, see my position. And luckily I did, and things kind of panned out the way that they did.
Yeah, geez, that's fantastic altogether. Like, I mean, it must be lovely then when you are starting, playing, you're kind of left inside with Galan and you stand to the edge of the square and you've loads of space either side to run into, and they're not the obvious balls down the line where the back might read it. They're the lovely diagonal balls, so you're getting some lovely service in there.
Oh, come here, when you're playing with the likes, I always say, you know, it's only when I started out my career, looking up to the likes of Dermot Burns and, you know, Declan and Dan and those boys that are playing in our backline. You know, I've looked up, they were my role models from day dot. I remember going up to the day against, the All-Ireland semi-final Limerick against Clare when they beat us. And, you know, in our under 21 games, myself and my father and my brother used to go into those games and, come here, these guys are my heroes. Like, as in, I'm just in awe that I'm playing with these fellas and playing alongside those boys. So when you're talking about the delivery of ball in, you know, it's an absolute joy. And Kyle has played as a forward for so long. He knows exactly what kind of ball you want inside. But you know, that diagonal ball, it cuts out your six man, it cuts out your opposite half back, and it's a nightmare for a full back line to get out. He can't play you from the front because the ball will go in over him, and with that ball that you're running onto is just absolutely unbelievable. But I think this year it was, you know, kind of roles reversed. Graham went out and he played at the top of the D. Myself and Aaron were inside, and you know, myself and Aaron have that relationship where he goes one side, I go the other, or, you know, two of us can overload one side, and you know, there's a lot of different kind of formations that you can involve, that you can play in from that position. So it really, really did work well for us when we got inside, and the ball that we were getting in, you know, was of top quality. So no, we couldn't have any complaints there.
Yeah, it definitely was. I'm saying Kinnerk has brought some football tactics into hurling.
Oh no, definitely. Like, you know, that two-man inside forward line, and you have that acre of space, and you know, the boys in the half forward line do so much work back that you really, like, realistically, I suppose, when you're looking at it, you have from the 65 in to the in line, really, to work with, you know. So there's a huge landing zone inside there for ball to be put in. And then, you know, you have the boys breaking off. I know Keane is constantly off the shoulder, so if a ball does go in, you know, you have that overlap and you can set up the boys going for goals and that. So huge. But yeah, Kinnerk definitely, you know, he has every day of the week, you know, Paul's drills are just something else. And I don't think I've ever done the same drill twice with Paul. It's always something new. It's always something innovative. It's special, and he's, you know, that just goes to show he's a top class coach.
Yeah. Have you done a lot of work on your point scoring as well? Because the odd one you might maybe miss hit in the past, but it'd be fair to say that, whereas, like, I mean, in the first half there in the All-Ireland final, you're running the wrong way on the sideline, scoring over your shoulder from the sideline. I don't know, maybe I'm disrespecting you in some way by saying maybe you were more noted for your ball winning ability.
Yeah, no, definitely. Going back to 2018, it was always a case of, you know, get the ball in, win it. And I suppose it was my first instinct was to pop the ball and set up someone else.
Yeah.
And then 2019, I didn't feature much. So, you know, there's not really much tactics associated with that. But when it got to 2020, I suppose it was, I really did. I kind of went down. And when I was with the club, you know, you're there's so much expected of you when you go with the club. So it was a case of, you know, everything was kind of being passed to me. So I suppose I got great opportunities in that regard to practice and, you know, nail down my shooting. And when I got back in with the Limerick setup after, let's say, when the championship was going ahead and even towards the league, it was a massive thing that I tried to work on in training. And I think that showed up trumps in this season. You know, when I got the opportunity, I think I hit very few wides.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I suppose it's practicing that same run to that same area and that same shot.
Exactly. And come here in training, you know, I'd always link up with Dermot. We'd go through our session, our warm-up session, and I'd always try and link up with Dermot or Kyle or Dan or, you know, whoever was playing in the half back line. And
yeah,
we practice those diagonal balls. And, you know, usually you're getting them, which in line with the netting post, but I was trying them out further. If you can score those ones, you know, you'll score the easy ones in front of the goals. So it was just, you know, practice. And, you know, there was a couple of times that myself and Moore would go out and, you know, you're trying those impossible shots down the wing and before training and that, I think that. So when it comes, you know, you have the practice, you know, muscle memory, and, you know, you take on those shots and you're confident in taking on those shots.
Yeah, there's an interesting one from you. It was on your Wikipedia page, so you'll have to confirm this with me, that you played cornerback with the under-21s and then were dropped for the second year as you're under 21.
Yeah, it was an odd one. I came on, I remember, I think it was under Leo O'Connor. I was after breaking my thumb, I think, and I wasn't sure if I was playing or not. And Leo thought, I think I was going to get on less ball at half back. So I started the game against, I started half back against Galway. down in Turles, and I can safely say I had an absolute stinker at halfback. So I don't think I'll ever be drifting back there again. But then the second, the year after, then I remember we were playing with, it was Pat Donnelly's year that we won it. And I think I came on in the Galway game in the semi-final for about 5 minutes. And I remember the following year, John gave me a buzz and asked me, would I come in with the senior setup? And I remember thinking to myself, this fella has the wrong number here. You know, I'm after playing, I think, 4 minutes of additional time against Galway in the semi-final. Didn't come on in the final. And I was like, this man definitely has the wrong number here. He's some other Seamus. It must be Seamus Hickey he's looking for, because it's not me. But we went in and look, 2018 panned out the way 2018 did.
Jeez, that's mad. Like, I mean, when you're not getting on the under-21s and you're being tried out in the backs, like, at that stage, you must be thinking, is this going to work out for me at all?
Yeah, you know, you start to question things and you're saying, you know, okay, number one, I'm not a back. So I don't know what was going on there. It was probably, you know, trying to, one of those mastermind tricks where, you know, Coyley did it with Coyle from centre forward back to half back, but it definitely didn't work out as well for me.
Who was the manager that put you back there?
Leo O'Connor.
Right.
So yeah, Leo tried me back there, and then I think it was Pat Donnelly that was the manager the year after. And you know, not getting a look in there, it was tough. But that team, you know, you had the stars, standout Barry Nash, Keane, Aaron featuring all again. It was a magic team, really, to be honest. But yeah, no, to not get a start there was difficult. But then I remember when John gave me the call, I absolutely jumped at it. As I said, I was in college above in Dublin, and making that commute, I was talking to my parents, and you know, what should I do? And you know, they were very much academic focused, so they were like, you know, get your studies, but you know, give it a go. And it was tough, but when things started going my way in 2018, I was like, I need to see this through. And you know, luckily I did, because that was the first edition of an All Ireland medal to my back pocket.
Yeah, incredible. I'm sure you have a lot of sympathy on poor Barry Nash, who's gone from a brilliant wing forward into a poor old dog and cornerback.
Yeah, I've marked him many a time in training, and he's after taking to the role like a duck to water. he's learned the tricks of the trade of the pulling and the dragging anyway, inside in the cornerback position. But no, come here, Barry. What a transformation, Barry. That same final with that minor team, Barry got man of the match at corner forward for Limerick in that 21 team against Kilkenny. And now look at him, he's after winning a second All Ireland medal at cornerback. And so what a transformation Barry Nash has, you know, it just goes to show, it's testament to the man. You know, he's one of the most determined men that I know, and any day in training he's with our video guy Shawnee and seeing where he can get better and looking at where he could improve and things that he did well and what he needs to keep doing. So Barry's a determined man.
Yeah, no, he's absolutely fantastic transformation. Come here, you're studying radiography in UCD. I'm not going to keep you much longer because, like you said, you've got exams before Christmas, so I'm sure you're studying. You don't strike me as the physics and maths type.
No, I think physics is probably the one I struggle with the most. But no, I got up to UCD, I think, maybe this, I'm in my last year now, so it was about 4 years ago, and it was the only place that did it. So when I was doing my leaving cert, I got chatting to a girl, and she was a qualified radiographer, and she was kind of talking to me about the, you know, what entails and, you know, stuff like that and what I needed, let's say, qualification wise through the leaving cert and that. So I think I took a shining and I went out to the regional then in Limerick, and I got a week's work experience done under my belt. And, you know, there's so much scope that you can move into in CT and MRI and ultrasound and stuff like that. So it's a really broad profession. So, you know, I took a shining to it, and, you know, never looked back since.
Yeah, well, listen, it's fantastic. I'll let you back to your studying or whatever you're doing, Seamus. Thanks very much for giving us your time.
Lovely. Cheers, Willie. Thanks very much.
Jeez, if I couldn't love Seamus Flanagan anymore, Brian, he comes on the show and he's a complete natural and complete honesty. I did like the one where, you know, before the game or in training, he'd pair off with Dermot Burns or something, and they might practice a few of those diagonal balls and where he runs to. And it's very obvious, like he said, how much he's practiced that shot from that side, because they bloody do it over and over again, Brian. It's not rocket science. They know what's coming and he knows where to practice it.
Yeah, I look, sure. It's good to get a little insight like that as well, and he's honesty there. He's a great fella because he had to work hard to obviously get a start this year.
Yeah.
To do so well, and look, again, it comes back to management to have those players so well primed. That, you know, obviously there is always a pecking order, but Seamus Flanagan is able to come back into that team so seamlessly and put in the performance he did over the, you know, the clutch moments, the Ireland semi-final and Ireland final, and to keep a player such as Peter Casey out of the team. It just shows how good he is and how good a setup it is as well. So, it's not by accident. You know, when you hear him describe that, it's not by accident that these things are happening. And it's, you know, it's actually great to hear.
Yeah, it definitely is. And he did double fist pump in the second half instead of just the one fist pump, which I thought was a classic. And like, I mean, that's obviously, you know, like he said, you know, getting out a lot of the frustration from the previous year because he couldn't get on the team. And he said his form obviously had dipped and, you know, didn't make any case for himself that he should have been on the team, you know, and then comes back this year again, not on it, then gets his break in the semi-final and is brilliant in two games. Like, you know what I mean? Maybe that'll spark him and he'll have the experience, you know, the carryover from the year before to the holiday to the season starting, you know, whereas this year he'll have a little bit more experience maybe to be able to deal with the All-Ireland win.
And you have to remember, like, 3 years ago now was such a whirlwind for Seamus Flanagan.
Yeah, he was only 19.
You know, but he was a sub for the under-21s in the year previous. And like, yeah, he got his start, you know, it's well documented, he got his start in the Waterford Crystal game. And he was so nervous going out to play his first game, but it just, you know, he got his break and he made it and it just worked for him. And he was a huge player for Limerick that year. You know, we think of him turning Glow and McInerney upside down in the Ireland final against Galway a couple of years ago. And he was massive for them. And I suppose it was a huge thing for him to try and process over the year. You know, to go from not being able to make the 21 team to being one of the linchpins of the team, you know, holding up full forward and such an important role to himself in terms of his what he was able to do with the ball, but also creating space and, you know, turning players over like he did, and to try and process that. And, you know, maybe it was a big leap, and as you said, hopefully he's in a much better position, maybe not for opposition to hear that, but for himself, obviously he's in a much better position now to deal with that level of success and be able to push on his performances even more.
Yeah, come here. Listen, this is the last show of the year, so I want to pick the All-Star team. And I have to say, I saw the Sunday game team of the year, and usually I'm whinging and bitching and moaning about these teams and like, oh God, I can pick it better. They picked a bloody fairly good team, if we're being honest. And there's very few positions up for grabs in this, Brian.
Very few positions, but I'll bitch and moan about the third midfielder, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, right. Well, I didn't actually see the show. I just saw the team that they picked. What's the third midfielder thing?
Yeah, and Jackie put forward a case, Jackie Turtle, a case that the way the game has gone, that only two play inside and sometimes even one, and that, you know, it's now a situation where there's some teams have four half forwards or three in midfield. I think a lot of teams now do play two inside in terms of staying inside and obviously move over and back across. You know, you see Limerick, Graham McCatty was playing top of the B nearly in all the games. Which is, to me, is still part of the full forward line. It's just, you know, moving out a bit. And that's not a new revolutionary tactic. It's just crept into the game over the last couple of years. Like, I think, you know, it's probably a different use of a full forward, but it has been used in over time. Like, you know, we go back to probably the first time a two-man full forward line was ever played was probably not the first time, but the first of recent history. And that goes back to an Ireland semi-final in 1986. You know, Galway did it in Kilkenny and didn't cope with it. But it didn't work in the final because Cork just left the corner back free and he ended up getting man of the match. So, you know, these tactics come and go down through the years. Plenty of teams have tried it. But I think, obviously, Limerick have it down to a T at the moment. Interestingly, speaking of Graham McCatty the other day, he went out to nullify Tadhg Burcha and then left Keane Lynch free. And being honest, this was really obvious at the game. In the first 15, 20 minutes of the time Tadhg Burcha went off, that was really working for Limerick. Keane Lynch was running an absolute muck up to there.
Yeah.
Ira Daly coming on actually helped Waterford in terms of he stood and went kind of toe-to-toe with Keane Lynch. Keane Lynch's influence on the game probably lessened after that. So anyway, I'm gone off on a tangent, but I just don't think, I didn't see the necessity for three midfielders because I didn't see any team really set up with three midfielders, and I was at a lot of games.
Who are the same as the third midfielder then? Because they're all forwards picked.
So they put Tony Kelly out as the third midfielder.
Ah, right. Okay, right. Forget about that. Look, listen, I'm not entertaining. They're trying to be too clever there. That's like picking Colm Kavanagh full back because he used to be a sweeper. They're overthinking it altogether. Colm Kavanagh has an all-star midfield and at full back. It's outrageous. But right, we'll start with the goalkeeper. So there is actually a question over the goalkeeper. It's Quaid versus O'Keefe. And to be honest with you, I think Quaid, look, I'm going to ask you because, listen, I'm not going to start. This is a very difficult one. So I'm going to throw it over to you.
I'm going to go Quaid. I think Quaid is absolutely excellent. He probably didn't have a huge amount to do leading up to the final, but he for me gives him the nod. And I know Stephen O'Keefe made it at brilliant double save. It was almost reminiscent of Brennan Cummins in 2003 against Kilkenny. You were just sure both of them were going to be goals, and it was excellent. And, you know, in fairness to Saki in the goal, he was very steady. Probably would have been disappointed with a couple of shots against Clare, but then he did make a brilliant save when needed that day as well. So I will give the nod to Nicky Quaid in that one.
Okay, right. Hopefully Nicky Quaid gets it. You don't want to fall into the James McGarry category where you don't make spectacular saves as much because your backs are so bloody good and miss out on an all-star.
Yeah. Right.
Full back line is Sean Finn. I'm going to say Sean Finn and Dan Morrissey are bankers.
Yeah.
So the other cornerback, yeah, the other cornerback slot is potentially up for grabs. The Sunday game gave it to Dottie Burke. I would say Nash is definitely in there. Would Aidan Hart be in there? Made a few mistakes in the semi-final, I suppose.
Yeah, his semi-final performance probably not up to the usual standards that he hit, to be honest, and made a couple of mistakes in that clutch moment with a couple of minutes to go as well, you know, and uncharacteristic for him, you know, hit the ball away and allowed Limerick to maybe, you know, just get over the line there. So, yeah, between Dottie Burke, I was probably kind of half throwing Conor Plunty in there as well. I thought he had a couple of fine performances, particularly in the semi-final and final. But yeah, Dottie Burke probably, in fairness to him, he was excellent in the Leinster final. He really was against Kilkenny. No matter who came in them, was it Fenley or TJ Reid, it didn't matter. He was excellent there. But maybe we could say Richie Hogan got the better of him there. You know, he sniped 1-2 when he was in full forward. So that gave them a lot to think about there. So look, we can pick holes and arguments, I suppose, in every player. Who are you giving the nod to?
I'd probably go with Dottie Burke there, if I'm being honest. Although between Nash and Burke, but I think Burke did very well on Callanan after a shaky first 5 minutes only. He did well for the other 70. Like, I mean, he dominated in there. We'll go with that for the full back line. Half back line, I'm going to say that Dermot Burns and Kyle Hayes are bankers. And for me, it's between Tadhg de Burgh and Callum Lyons. Now, I'm making a very strong case for Callum Lyons. 1-2 against Cork. Did very well in Garrod Hegarty in the Munster final. He was brilliant against Kilkenny. Now, he didn't, if we're being honest, Garrod Hegarty got all the scores off Callum Lyons when Waterford started getting desperate, or maybe not all of them, but he got a few of them off him. Is Callum Lyons done enough? Tadhg de Burgh didn't play all that game. So if you're to judge the two of them off the games that they, you know, until Tadhg de Burgh went off in the All-Ireland final, Callum Lyons wins it. Callum Lyons might lose to Tadhg de Burgh for the rest of the match that Tadhg de Burgh didn't play.
Yeah, I take your point exactly on that, being honest. Callum Lyons probably showed a bit of defensive naivety in the All-Ireland final. You're quoting, he scores, and he got a brilliant point in the All-Ireland final too. He would be a nightmare to mark in terms of a player that just drives forward, you know, strong in the air, brilliant runner, you know, driving down the field. A nightmare, but I suppose what Garrod Hegarty did was said, well, you know, if you want to go down there, off you go, but I'm going the other way and I'm going to pick scores for sport, you know. So on that side of things,
who are you going for there? Who are you going for?
I'm going to go with Tadhg de Burgh.
Tadhg de Burgh. Right, I go for Callum Lyons for what it's worth. Right, midfield, you're talking about William O'Donoghue, Cian Lynch, Jamie Barron, Cathal Mannion. I threw Cathal Mannion into the mix, probably off his Tipperary performance. Like, he did play well. Which two would you pick out of there?
Cian Lynch, I think, is a search. I think there's no doubt about that. William O'Donoghue, very unlucky, but I thought Jamie Barron was probably one of the main hurlers throughout the year. Probably didn't have as big influence in the All-Ireland final, but that probably comes back to Limerick, how good they were, but Limerick or Waterford wouldn't be in All-Ireland only for Jamie Barron.
All right, okay, that's the midfield then. I probably tend to agree with that, although you have to say William O'Donoghue is very unlucky to lose out there. I would say that between him and Jamie Barron, it's very unlucky. And in another year, you might put Willie O'Donoghue wing forward, but there's no getting on this team wing forward because Hegarty.
You could put Cian Lynch in the forwards because he obviously played two games to centre forward, you know. So.
Yeah, but then look at the half forward line, and I'll ask you that again. It's Hegarty, TJ, and Morrissey. That's a shut up shop.
Yeah, well, exactly. That closes up that.
Closes that up. Like, you would say. in another year, based off his semi final and final performance, Austin Gleeson's getting a half forward line slot there.
Yeah, Austin, like, can you go down through it? Probably unlucky not to win one because he brilliant performance in the second half, particularly in the semi final. Waterford's best forward in the All-Ireland final, you know, put to bed some of the ghosts of the All-Ireland final 2017. Really stood up when they needed him. He was a little bit quieter in the year, but he's still scoring 2 or 3 points per game. And to me, unlucky now, I have to say, not getting the nod.
Yeah, okay, right. Full forward line then. There's two bankers, Tony Kelly and Stephen Bennett, as far as I would be concerned. The other one, for me, is up for grabs. And you've got Aaron Gillan, Seamus Flanagan, Desi Hutchinson and Conor Whelan. I'm not sure where you go there. I would be leaning towards Conor Whelan.
Personally, I'd be Gillan. 4 points in Ireland final, people say he didn't hurt great. I just think Gotti Burke getting socks with Ireland semi-final. But apart from that, you know, he was one of the front runners for Hurler of the Year. So to me, it'd be Gillan.
Right, okay. So you don't think there's any even debate about that. All right, well, that's okay. So we're going to go for Hurler of the Year. Who do you think?
Front runner for Ireland, or for Hurler of the Year going into Ireland final, he scored 7 points of play. I think that answers anyone.
All right, just as well. Tom Morrissey, unlucky.
Yeah. Ireland final. He would have got it any other day, only for the fact that he outscored him.
Any other year, Tom Morrissey is the Hurler of the Year. And Tom Morrissey was in the for Hurler of the Year in 18 as well. I don't think he made the shortlist, but he should have made it. I don't think he won an All-Star that year. Did he?
I can't remember. I really can't remember now, to be honest. He's excellent. I thought his performance in Ireland was unbelievable. To my recollection, he had 5 assists. You know, he's about 4 of them for Hegarty as well. So, you know, Hegarty owes him a point or two.
Yeah, he definitely does. Manager of the Year?
Sure, it's John Kiley or Liam Cahill, really, isn't it?
Yeah, between the
two of them. John Kiley getting them back. They're unbeaten all year, first time since 1961. The team goes unbeaten. You know, Tipperary were the team to do in 1961 League and Championship. Very hard not to give it to John Kiley in those situations.
John Kiley, I'd say, yeah, but if it's all relative, would you not say that Liam Cahill, for the job that he's had at the start of the year, John Kiley has an incredible bunch of players who are Munster League, All-Ireland defending champions. I know they went the season unbeaten, but could you argue that Liam Cahill, the job he did is more impressive? It's a bit like David Moyes or something winning the Manager of the Year over Alex Ferguson because he got Everton into fourth or something like that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the fact. Like, look, yeah, Liam Cahill's considered a so-called rookie manager. You know, going in on the back of what Waterford had 2 poor seasons, hadn't won a game in 2 years, definitely took a point of that one. Right, we gave the nod to Liam Cahill for that one.
Okay, Liam Cahill. Actually, Tom Morrissey didn't get one. Peter Duggan and Seamus Harnedy got them on the two wings back in 2018, which I thought was outrageous back then. But at least he's got it this time, which is great. Just to finish up, Young Hurler of the Year. I don't want to be disrespectful to the Young Hurlers of the Year, but this is in a lot of years, this is very obvious who's going to win this. And this year, geez, you'd be doing well to make a shortlist.
That's a fact. We were scratching our heads about this one now. And, you know, no disrespect, as you said, like there's some fine Young Hurlers out there, but there's actually only a handful of them actually playing in the county senior at the moment. You know, Limerick have a very young team. You know, Kyle Hayes probably been the youngest at 22, and, you know, the rest of them 23, 24, whatever. But you know, it's very hard to find them. Do you know, like, lads that are really nailed down an inter-county spot, a starting place, and, you know, say playing week in, week out for their county. Thin on the ground, actually, you know.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Our nominations for this one are Owen Cody, Jake Morris. And who was the third one? It was McCarthy.
Robert Downey and Aidan McCarthy, yeah. You know, but maybe we'll throw the two of them in, to be fair. There's 4 of them in the mix maybe, yeah.
Robert Downey, Aidan McCarthy. So who are we going for? Owen Cody? Yeah. Or Jake Morris?
Possible penny. Owen Cody or Jake. Like, Jake Morris got 2 big goals, I would say. He got a great goal against Limerick. I know they were beaten that day, but he got probably the goal against Cork saw them over the line that day. Just for that reason alone, I'd be giving Jake Morris the nod.
Okay, all right, brilliant stuff. Right, well, listen, Brian, have a good Christmas. We're going to give you the Christmas off now, and we'll have you back in training in February for a league probably starting at the end of February. I hope that's okay. Winter well now, Brian. You better winter well.
Oh, I better not. Good luck, Sam.
Right, thanks, Brian. All right, listen, that's the last show for the year. We'll be back, you know, in the new year, and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, because I won't see you later. We're not allowed to talk here.